This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is the place for local, regional talk about issues that affect your livelihood and about your quality of life. We've got some great guests in the studio today, and we've got some great topics to inform you about. So, wow, so many things having to do with the city of Salem, their proposed ordinances, their governance, some of their leaders, and we're going to talk about the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce and their leadership role and their educational role, honestly, and making sure that we're all aware of these things. They had a great forum this morning. We even threw around the idea of broadcasting this thing because the topics are so important in our community. So in the studio with me today, we have a returning, because I invited him back from last month, two of my favorite people. We have Tom Hoffert, who's the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and Bruce Anderson, who's employed at Northwest Natural, but he's currently serving in a volunteer capacity as the chamber's president. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
So let me start by saying I was in attendance this morning in everyone's favorite 7 o'clock meeting in the city. Right? So let me paint a picture for you, listener.
I actually would think breakfast would take precedent over that. But
yeah, I was thinking about bringing breakfast. I was thinking somebody needs to start sponsoring breakfast if we're going to meet at 7.
And, that's a brilliant
and
idea.
And not Roth's Donuts, because they're the best on earth and I'll eat them. So, all right.
Bacon. We have to have bacon.
Bacon-wrapped maple bars. Okay, we're getting distracted.
Now you're talking.
All right, let me just say, folks, I continually, and you guys know I'm a homie for the chamber, right? You know I've served the chamber as a board and as president, and there's a reason. It's because I believe in the mission. So let me tell you what happened this morning. The room is full of people. Had to pull out chairs in the room. There's a panel to speak to us about these proposed ordinances and get the chamber's take and for the chamber to be educated from the horse's mouth, right? The panel consists of Chuck Bennett, of course, but also the city manager of the city of Salem. He is the CEO on, for all intents and purposes, of the city. Two city councilors, the urban development director, and the chief of police were all presenting, along with a citizen member of the task force, Raquel Moore Green, who participated as a citizen and as a leader in the task force for these revenue increases. Great panel to and great amount of information, right? Wait, there's more. In the room, we have four county commissioners, folks. We have business leaders. We have board members of the chamber. We have four regional county commissioners in the room. And like I said, the room was packed. This is the place, the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, where the community discussion takes place. If you're not a member, go join. If you're not a member, you want to come check it out, come check it out. Yes, I'm a homie, but I don't get paid to recruit, do I, Tom?
Not yet.
But I'm just telling you, and we've been singing this song for a long time, the Chamber of Commerce building, there's so much more than an advocacy for business, which is their core mission. This is where the community conversation happens, and this is where, if you want to get plugged in, and if you want to be informed, where you showed up. Actually, I've got a client from my day job that was in the room today. It was her first meeting ever, Tom. Mm-hmm. She's a member. Honestly, I think I had presumed that she was one way politically, and she asked a very non-political, just pragmatic, how does it work for both sides of this issue? And it was really nice to see her join in the conversation, because I know it's another small employer who's, you know, mortgaged her life to buy a commercial building and run a business with about 5 employees. Hmm. Really nice to see them involved and plugged in. All right. So to our guests, Bruce, welcome. You're serving as president. We want to thank you for your volunteer hours. The forum today was about the revenue measures that we've been hearing about from the mayor, the ordinances, and what is the chamber's position going to be. What did you think of the city manager's presentation on the situation, and how do you think that was received by the group?
Well, I'm going to defer to Tom on that, because I missed a good chunk of Steve Powers's presentation.
Yeah, did you get a feel for it as far as the audience and how he presented?
Yeah, I think, Brent, to your point, and as this chamber looks at our community, we are a place where everybody needs to feel they have a great place to gather and gain information on why we are in the situations that we are. Our city is operating a $632 million annual budget. And one of the challenges in managing that type of budget is the fact that our general fund is a portion of that budget. And what comes out of the general fund is, of course, the funding mechanisms for many important services, but 80% of which are your police and fire. So anytime we have a discussion that would have to do with raising revenues to influence positively the general fund, we know that we're largely talking about emergency services, given that they are 80%, actually 81%, as City Manager Steve Powers shared this morning, of that budget. So I think by putting together the program like Steve did and sharing why we are in this situation, it resonates with our membership. And I think it's a tribute to our membership that they want to invest and understand better what occurs in the city budget process. To me, it is about information dissemination. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure our citizenry, not just the business community, not just certain advocacy groups, better understand what's occurring and why we're in these places that we are. So Steve did have a compelling story as to why revenue is being sought. And I would say more of a credit would go to the volunteer citizens that stepped up and served on the task force to evaluate 14 unique funding mechanisms that the city was to consider and debate. Now, where it puts us here today is we have two funding mechanisms that have been brought forward to the city council for their consideration. For this discussion today, we had Mayor Bennett present. We had Councilor Chris Hoy, Councilor Jim Lewis, and Councilor, who am I forgetting?
Those are the three councilors.
Those are the three councilors.
Raquel.
Yep. Raquel, pardon me. So Raquel, as one of the service members on that task force, provided great perspective. Universally, that task force came out with two high-impact measures, opportunities for the city to look at funding, but with this caveat, 100% agreement that those funding mechanisms needed to go to a vote of the people. So,
and that right now, that is the position and the recommendation of your chamber board, right?
That is correct. Our board, in their June board meeting, took an official position not for or against either of the funding mechanisms, but rather that good stewardship of the monies that our citizenry pays in should have the opportunity to have a voice in that discussion on whether they are supportive of that effort. So that was, again, clearly stated by our public policy group this morning and would be the ask of our board to continue to share that message with Salem City Council.
This is a little bit premature, but maybe we can get a feel on it, especially since we have the current president and his leadership. Obviously, the chamber is already doing its role of disseminating the information and getting it out, and hopefully you'll continue to do so with publications and newsletters and such. But if they do send it to the voters, do you think the chamber will take an active role on supporting or not supporting, or would do you think the feel of the board is going to be more like we're here for an information services and let the voter really decide with the information what they want to buy?
Well, that's a good question. That would have to be something that we would have to discuss in terms of where we're, and we haven't had that conversation yet on whether to support or oppose that measure. As someone who's been involved as a city councilor in the past here in the beautiful city of Kaiser, Oregon, mm-hmm. I come at budgeting from a different perspective, because we're notoriously tight with our pennies here in the city of Kaiser. I think if we were to do something like that, that's hard to say, because if you're going to oppose something like that, then how are you going? How do things move forward with respect to fulfilling those services?
Right.
I think it's also important to note that one of the biggest drivers, because as Tom pointed out, the largest chunk of our where those dollars are going are personnel. Okay, so the personnel is also tied in with PERS. And realizing that we don't have a little magic wand that we're going to be able to solve this problem immediately, I really have believed firmly that something needs to be addressed with respect to PERS reform, because that's driving a lot of our costs.
Yeah.
And I can recall when that West Salem Fire Hall was brand new, open, and then it was shut because we didn't have the funding for it. So that's something that I think the city of Salem should be taking an active part in terms of getting the legislature to address that issue. That's a huge issue that state and local governments are all facing, and nothing really significantly got resolved in this session of the legislature on that.
That's Bruce Anderson with Northwest Natural, current chamber president. We're going to take a break here with us in the audience. Along with Bruce is Tom Hoffert, the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber. We're talking about the revenue measures of the city of Salem and whether or not you're going to get to have a vote on them. And actually, they're changing the date and on when they're going to be addressing them at the city council. And there's so much more to talk about. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape. Hello, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne in the studio with us today. Of course, we're talking with Tom Hoffert and Bruce Anderson, continuing our conversation from last segment about the revenue, actually the meeting at the chamber this morning where all of these things were being discussed and the position the chamber has. Tom, if you would, we got a little bit from the mayor on Tuesday. Could you tell us, if these things move forward, especially if they move forward with not a vote of the people, like a lot of people fear, including the mayor. Mayor says he wants it to go to vote of people, but he thinks he's going to lose that vote. What's the timeline? When would people start paying more? When would they have an opportunity to complain and things like that?
Sure, Brent. So this will have its first reading at the city council meeting on August 12th. So this is in the pipeline. We are less than a month away from the first opportunity for the public to hear the true dollar figures. We did get those shared this morning, and we know the direction they're going. And then we would obviously have the opportunity for public hearing. That is looking to be the last meeting in August on August 26th. Those are Monday nights. They occur at City Council chambers, and they are open to the public. And as the mayor echoed this morning, the invitation is open. They want to see the public out and share their expressions, because that is the chance to address the entire council as one singular unit.
Okay. And then when does it touch the pocketbook? Say it passes. I think they were talking like February or something. Are they sometime next year?
They would be looking at start of the year, January implementation date. The payroll tax is a little unique, Brent, in that it has to go through a normal tax cycle. And that is some deliberations on how the state of Oregon will be a participant in this process. So that could be a longer than a January, February implementation date. The operating fee is something that could be moved on very, very quickly. So the process there would not be delayed.
Okay. Yeah, I heard a few whispers this morning or some innuendos that the state does not think too keenly and kindly upon taxing of their employees, and maybe they're going to drag their feet a little bit and try to do as much as they can not to have to administrate a tax on the paychecks of their own employees. Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, that's certainly.
Bruce is nodding over there. I'm like, I got that feeling too.
It's kind of interesting when we're putting together some assumptions to how we want to build the dollar figures and so forth when we're doing things like that. But as someone who's been around state government for about 30 years now, the one thing that I, and a local resident here, one of the biggest challenges that the city of Salem, as you know, Brent, former city councilor, is they're the biggest property owner in the city. Mm-hmm. Yet they,
the state is.
Yeah, yeah. They don't pay 1 cent of property tax, and which is one of the biggest problems with respect to how much money the city of Salem has to spend. And so they're supposed to make that in lieu of payment. I think we're still waiting for that decades and decades and decades later. So my concern would be, how do you compel the state of Oregon to pay these dollars? And mm-hmm. I think that's a little challenging, that and an answer or a question that has not been answered yet.
Yeah, and it did get posed again this morning by Jason Brandt, who is runs the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association and previously with the Salem Chamber, was, hey, are the other capitals paying this in their communities, this payment in lieu of, because they don't pay taxes? And well, one of the ironies of that is they were making a payment in lieu of to the transit district, but not to the city of Salem. Anyway,
right.
Do you guys feel that the people in the room accepted that there is a revenue issue and a shortfall issue that's getting worse over time? Because that, you know, we had people of different political stripes there, right? And you have different people, including like the Home Builders Association, isn't really known for their liberal activism or anything, right? So you have all sorts of spectrums, and the mayor was quick to, you know, no, actually it was Raquel Moore Green, who served on, said there were all stripes on this committee. She seemed to imply that everybody agreed that there is a disconnect between the revenues and the services we're offering, that what we're offering right now costs more than the money we're taking each year, and so eventually you're going to run out of your savings account. Okay. How many people in the room, did you sense of the room? It seemed like everybody in the panel accepted that as a given. Hmm. Tom?
Well, I think there's an assumption that the business community will always be against funding of governments if it's seen as luxury. And so I want to be careful on this answer, Brent. Here's what I would share. As I posed a couple very challenging questions to Steve Powers as our city manager, and he and full marks delivered the mail on the answers. So the first question I posed was, is there an excessive workforce waiting to be hired, that is not currently employed by the city, but budgeted for? And in the past, this was an issue with mm-hmm. the city of Salem. And they would have a budget crisis, and then we would find out there's 41 funded positions that are not currently employed or whatever. Now, that is a fictitious number, but not a fictitious explanation of what we used to face. So, right.
So the people weren't sitting there. They didn't have to pay them, so they, you know, came under budget.
So yeah. What Steve did provide factually is there are currently 5 open positions at the city of Salem, one of which falls in the general fund. And while he wouldn't quantify that, we know that one position is not going to, if we did not hire that one position, we would not make up the $7.2 million shortfall. So I appreciate Steve being forthright on that. And I have found Steve to be a gentleman who is very good to work with and factually based for the business community. I think another question that was posed of the city is, and the very tricky answer and what I would like to see continued dialogue on is, should this not be 2 funding mechanisms that are taken forward? Should there be a voter outcry that says, we are going to send this to the vote, and what is the worst case scenario? There have been no presentations made in public or through email or on the website of what those funding cuts would be. That to me is problematic. So if you are basically moving forward that this is going to happen because you have not prepared for if this would not happen. And I think part of, from a business perspective, is we have to look at both sides and understand that the ultimate voice needs to be our electorate. And we have to take a look at these situations and be prepared for possibly getting an answer from the electorate that we may not like as a government official, and see how we can be prepared to keep this city moving forward in the right direction. That work has not been done yet. That is not a negative on city manager Powers at all. He's done a fine job in this preparation, but that's the deeper discussion that ultimately needs to occur if we as a citizenry decide that this is something that the people should vote on, and what happens if they don't give the answer the city is hoping for.
You did, actually, out of your group this morning, somebody from the crowd did kind of pose that question, because what's the dollar cost of the delay? You know, so so it goes to a vote, and this doesn't pass in the timeline, you think, and specifically for this the fee. And the answer is that this budget right now, they're budgeting to spend that $7.2 million more than they're taking in. So they're drawing down. They have budgeted to draw down $7 million of reserves. So if it goes quickly, then maybe they don't draw down as many reserves. And if it gets carried out, at least the next 12 months, the answer is they're going to draw down $7 million. And they're going to have to make some adjustments in a hurry in the next budget cycle to do a combination of cuts and have that public discussion of whether they're going to cut. So it's, real quick, Bruce, if I may ask, and you can jump in with that comment as well, but the two of us have served and seen public budgeting, so it's a little different perspective, despite, you know, I've been accused of being a little bit of a fiscal conservative, right? But I do have a perspective of what happens in the city in the budget process and the collection of property tax dollars and the effects of PERS and all these things that, frankly, most people don't have time to dive into. So I wanted to get your take as a former city councilor on your personal view of the shortfall and the impact of PERS and the impact of property tax limitations.
Well, first of all, I will just throw out that I can understand the dilemma that our city officials are in, because you've got your property tax rates are capped. And that's a challenge for them. Someone who works for a utility, the second largest bucket generally for most cities are franchise fees. That goes right into the general fund to be spent on whatever. But so I think a lot of local governments' options are pretty limited, and so they're going to be looking at this quote unquote creative accounting ideas. My challenge that I have is just, depending on this budget or these monies to come in, rather than setting your budget and then, you know, identifying where those new revenues are going to be spent on, rather than to augment or supplement an existing budget. That's a little bit of a challenge that I have. Here in Kaiser, we did something where we put a $5 per month fee on everybody's water and sewer bill for to pay for some new police officers, and then a $5 fee for parks. But that was just additional that was not going towards our existing infrastructure that we need the funding for. So I'm a little bit, I'm kind of a question mark in my mind and why you would adopt your budget and then hope that the dollars come in to supplement that, rather than identifying something that those are going to go for that you want to bring into your budget. So
the Kaiser example, new revenue buys this new service. And in the city of Salem's, hey, we need new revenue to stop the bleeding, right?
Yeah, we needed more. We were woefully behind here in Kaiser for police officers and our staffing levels there. And we still are. But this added in. And those, I might point out, our police chief did target those to specific, not just extravagant things, but hey, we need it in this, that, and the other area, rather than just add in like more folks to work in the office or something like that, but actually feet on the street.
There were some really interesting things thrown out by the city manager today of cost. The general fund employees per 1,000 residents, and I like that ratio thing, is how many employees does it take to run all of our services per 1,000 employees or thousands of residents? And it's, you know, cycled down.
How does it compare to other?
That I didn't answer, but that's a good question. And another very good question we heard in the chamber this morning was, what is the trend in the cost per employee, right? All right, this is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Tom Hofford and Bruce Anderson. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is sponsored by Color Tile of Salem. Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us the conversation. These things are so important to our quality of life. It's quality of life here in the Mid-Valley. It's so important to also how much of our money we get to keep and where it gets spent and whether or not we have a say in it. We're going to segue right now from the revenue issues to a new ordinance having to do, and we were talking to the mayor about this on Tuesday, having to do with the homeless situation downtown and people camping on public sidewalks and trying to craft an ordinance that doesn't quote-unquote criminalize homelessness but does protect the rights and the safety and the livelihoods of the people who go downtown, live downtown, do business downtown, while we're trying to also offer services to the homeless and kind of walk that dance. Tom Hoffert, CEO of the Salem Area Chamber. How does the chamber feel about this ordinance moving forward?
Yeah, Brennan, one unique point I'd like to start with is the preface. This is a scene largely in the downtown core, but this is actually an ordinance that would cover the entire city. So this is not a region-specific ordinance. This is designed certainly with the thought of our downtown small businesses in mind. This ordinance is, first of all, there's a very human side to homelessness. And I looked around the room and I look at our membership and the greater business community as a whole. These are individuals who care very much for the personal side of the homeless issue that our city faces. They are funding nonprofits and the active participants who are providing resources to this segment of our community. And it is a name with a face. And we have community leaders who are stepping up on all fronts to make sure there are services and abilities for the homeless population to continue to have the ability to access help and the ability to find a better path in life if they so choose. What this ordinance, being called the Sidewalks and Public Spaces Ordinance, intent is to allow our small businesses, the individuals who frequent downtown establishments across the city, to do so in a way that they are not fearing for their safety and they're not experiencing the property degradation that has occurred through some of the vagrancy issues occurring in the city. We have a number of our small businesses that have reached out to the Salem Chamber and asked if we were to be presented with an ordinance that would assist them. And really, the mechanism and tool is to assist the police department in the city of Salem, chaired and led by Chief Jerry Moore, with the ability to, in a professional and respectful manner, ask that the individuals who are either setting up a base camp, lying or residing in public spaces, to be moved along and requested to be moved along, and should they be non-compliant, to have a citation issued. At no point is this a discussion, as you mentioned, on criminalizing homelessness. There are people who elect this lifestyle. Oftentimes, this lifestyle is accompanied with drug or alcohol dependency. A lot of very tragic factors lead an individual into this situation. That human side is not misunderstood by the Salem Chamber nor anybody in this community, and we ought to be proud of the resources that are in Salem to assist these people. What this mechanism allows is for the property owner and those patrons that want to come into our businesses, whether it's a public facility or a private facility, to do so and be able to access in a safe way, as well as not fear that their property will be damaged by the individuals who are choosing this lifestyle.
So this is a real issue. We talked about it earlier this week with the mayor, and I throw out that there's a constituency, and this is trying to balance, this ordinance is trying to balance your concerns that you're talking about, because there's a constituency that really wants the city to do things about those homeless people, right? because they're not happy. That's unsightly. They don't feel safe. It's certainly, as the mayor said on Tuesday, what was the word? Antisocial behavior. You know, you just, there's just no accepting. And the police chief, Moore mentioned, there's no accepting, you know, hostility, defecating in public, and all of these things. So, but one constituency, you have to do something about those homeless, but then there's also the constituency, we need to do something for those homeless. And it seems like it's a path that we're not going to come roust you and throw you on a rail out of town, but you're also not going to be able to camp in, on the sidewalk. And that, so they trying to balance those things. Let me see. There was, they're navigating around, you know, the needs of those two things. Also navigating around public safety resources, right, Tom? And the priorities for the jail, the dollars that are spent incarcerating. They don't really want to do that. And they also have to navigate around previous court decisions.
Yeah,
that's limiting them is what they can do.
I think Councilor Chris Hoy did a great job encapsulating. 2 years ago, he actually led the council discussion to kill this project. And to Councilor Hoy's credit this morning, he said he would be in support of this ordinance because it has recognized the human side of this. But the deep passion that our small business owners in this city feel truly threatened to be able to operate their business successfully day in and day out due to a segment of our population. That isn't what's right and best for this city. What this ordinance does is actually creates the impetus for change, and it routes through our police, professional police services, it routes an individual to a better pathway. It is a, hopefully, as I look at it, is an ignition switch to start a conversation and say, hey, what you're partaking in right now is not permissible in this city. You need to be routed into a different environment that can allow you to have the resources you need or be in a properly allocated public space that allows for you to be there without being disruptive of our small businesses. This is the type of public policy our community ought to be very proud of. Our Salem Chamber Board is going to look at this in the coming days, and I am quite certain we'll look to take a position. I think this group of individuals who serve on our Chamber Board do so with incredible thoughtfulness to what's right in the community, and I could see our organization coming out in support of this ordinance. I know I have heard from our downtown small businesses, they are very, very hopeful that the chamber can pass on support for this. So I think those next steps that that our board under Bruce's leadership will take will clarify where the chamber sits on this.
Chamber President Bruce Anderson is who you're referring to right here. Your takes on this ordinance, and do you think it's a good move forward?
I think Tom really set the stage here in terms of the issues and the concerns that are out there right now. The other thing to bring into this whole thing is what is the quality of life that we all in the Salem area want to have? We want to be mindful and we have to have concern for those folks that likely have some dependency issues and so forth. But by the same token, how are we going to continue to have a vibrant downtown as well as all of the other outlying businesses as well? I can recall hearing from Larry Jackson, Jackson's Auto Body, about some of the concerns that his employees would have when they would come in the morning. And that's definitely not a downtown,
not even downtown
business.
Right?
No, it's out Silverton Road, I think. So how do we balance those aspects of things? We want to be able to have the cool restaurants and places to go, but there's this other issue that are going to have to be dealt with. And I think there has to be some fairness for those downtown business owners as
Safety,
well.
Safety, security, right? And cleanliness.
Yep.
It's going to be critical for a central business district to be livable.
And we want people to come visit here too. And
right. We want people working issue. In the Capital Manor to come, or Capital Mall to come and patronize. We want more. There are more and more people living downtown. It's definitely a quality of life issue.
Can I throw out one other quick thing? I can just recall reading some of the letters to the editor up at the Oregonian of folks that have come from outside of the state of Oregon to visit Portland. expressing their huge concerns and personal safety issues with respect to trying to navigate downtown Portland streets and the MAX trains and the whole nine yards. And so is that the type of environment that we really want to have? It's a balancing act.
Great point. Hey, Salem, let's not emulate Portland, shall we? Let's be Salem. Let's do it better.
Or Seattle.
We gotta go. We've got with Sergeant Mike coming on. Sergeant Mike and Cowboy Ron, if you listened to us last week or so. And we're going to give them a second for the rest of the hour. But we want to thank Tom Hoffert, for the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber, and Bruce Anderson, the current board president, for being here today and tackling these issues with us. And we'll look forward to having both of you on and continuing the conversation. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. Welcome back. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne. And in the studio, we have back a couple of guys with their own unique perspective on the world. And if we could only put them in charge. We've got Sergeant Mike. And if you're a KYKN listener, you know Sergeant Mike. We've got Cowboy Ron. And these two cahoots want to give us their viewpoint of the world. Hey, can I just ask you, Cowboy Ron, here I've been somewhat every now and then critical of the governor. You know, and what she's doing and how she does it and what she doesn't do. All right, let's get Cowboy Ryan's take on what the governor's job.
Well, I just want to figure out what's on her mind and how it's functioning. This gal is absolutely, well, I better reverse that. This person is just an absolute runaway with Oregon's money and the individual residents of Oregon and their funds. She likes taxes. She likes to create bills
create a new division.
Well, we have a new agency coming now. Who's going to run that? It's going to be Dear Kate Brown, picking out some person to run it, putting it together that I believe doesn't have any organizational skills at all, and of course, no clerical or budgeting skills. Kate Brown is running away with the state of Oregon.
All right. So, but you don't know opinions on that, I see.
Yeah. I got a couple. One is on this continued cap and trade. I just think it's great that that the guys got out of town, guys and gal got out of town, and so they didn't have to vote. They weren't there. And Ron made a good point to me a while ago. He said, you know, Kate's not going after, they won't enforce ICE for illegal aliens, but she'll send the cops after her political enemies that are sitting over in Vancouver or Boise.
Yeah, that didn't go very far, did it?
No.
No, the state boys, they said they're not going to do it. So
I'll tell you what, I think this non-enforcement of ICE and all of that and ignoring everything. Like everything is going to be better or something. She's trying to appeal to California, who's a train wreck. You know, her buddies down there. And I'm, you know, California's got a fourth of all the homeless people in the world, and we're trying to do our part to catch up with them.
Well, we're trying to make Salem, Oregon, and Oregon safe. Okay, look at the amount of break-ins, robberies, attacks on young children, women. I would like to see Oregon safe. We talked at our last session about people who are fearful. I'm fearful. You know, I have a concealed carry, Utah and state of Oregon. I have guns on me and in the truck. And
yipe.
Yeah, thank God I've got a dog. My dog's real good. But she knows, tells me when a bad person is coming. Mm-hmm. But the unfortunate thing, we've got young men here with children, families trying to raise them that can't even come out on the street at night. You can't even walk down Salem at dark. You've got to have some assistance, got to have somebody with you. One of the issues that absolutely chokes me is we have with the homeless people, we have a number of issues. We have illegals, which should not be here. And that problem federally is going to get addressed. And our president is working on that. But you'd better realize that that border, we have people from other countries coming through there that we're not stopping. We've got illegals, we've got drugs, and we've got criminals, we've got insane. We've got a mess brewing. It's been brewing. They should have handled it 20 years ago.
Yeah. And in fact, just exactly that. For all you know, never Trumpers out there, get over to this side of the line. You may not like the way he acts socially. I'm sorry. But he is a leader, and he's causing good things to happen.
Oh, our economy is doing incredible.
It just, you know, you made a comment to me a while ago. You were over fishing at on the coast, and you pulled into Yaquina Bay Harbor there.
Oh, my God, Sunday morning. I came over the top of Yaquina Bay with my boat going silver and Chinook fishing.
Yeah.
It was 6:30. The South Beach Marina was completely full. I'll bet you there was close to $1 billion worth of rolling stock and people in Oregon having a wonderful time.
You know, that we're talking about boats that are 100, 200, 300.
Totally.
You know, 1,000. We're talking about big trucks, quality, $100,000 pickups pulling all this. And you can't get a parking place.
Yeah. I parked out by the aquarium. Yeah. I got there about an hour too late.
That means the quality of life is good in Oregon, right? Big trucks and big boats.
We're screaming. We're going. And yeah. Then, dear Mr. Krupp, I'm just into deregulating everything. Let's cut this overhead down. Let's watch the money being spent.
Quit spending. I mean, just quit spending. So, I'm having to do it, run this business.
So, Sergeant Mike, I was listening to you in the hallway a little bit, and you were posing a question about what this cost overruns with the police station. You guys talk about that? Are you going to solve this issue,
did.
Too?
Don't get that one going.
Here's what I said. If I had an advertising agreement for $300 a month with a customer, and I came back to them in the second month of our agreement, I said, you know, you're still going to get those ads, but it's going to cost you $400 a month now. He'd throw me out of my head, you know, and that's what I don't have. That's a contract.
Yeah, I got hit. I'm getting hit for $160 a month on my payroll.
$180.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just
3.3. Yeah,
that's
just because somebody's not running it.
$180 a month.
Yes,
you're paying.
Yeah, and I'm on Social Security too.
Well, Cowboy Ron, that's due to a new payroll tax.
Yeah,
right?
It's coming.
And wait, do you see your property tax bill? Because that's how we're paying for the police officers.
Yeah, no
police
kidding.
Facility.
Well, you always got the library too. So
that's right. We get a triple whammy. But we asked for it as voters, I guess. If you live in the city of Salem, you got the police, you got the Salem Kaiser bond, right, and you got the library.
Yeah, they're really good.
Can't
at
wait till
dollars.
November, right?
Oh yeah, let's do it again. You know.
Hey, I just want to say one thing. We're getting so much feedback on our short segment each week, and I'm glad you're here, Cowboy Ron. I'm glad these guys give us a little time to talk this over.
Yeah, thanks, Sarge. I mean, I really enjoy it, too. But we just kind of an any note for me, if I can sneak it in, I've got to do it quick. People of Salem, people of Oregon, get involved. See where your dollars are going. Get involved.
Thanks for being with us. We're going to do this tomorrow. It'll be a great show coming up again tomorrow. We'll get to the nitty-gritty on 1430 KYKN.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.